Hello, and welcome to our third exciting NABBW teleseminar for June 2012. In a moment, I will introduce our guest, Kelly Connors, MPH, and she will be discussing an interesting topic, finding the me in menopause. But first, let me introduce myself and set the stage. I'm Ann Holmes, the Boomer-in-Chief of the National Association of Baby Boomer Women, and we are found online at www.nabbw.com. We also have a hugely popular forum at www.boomerwomenspeak.com and a Facebook page. That's also easy to find. It's at facebook.com/NABBW. Our websites are the number one sites found via the major search engines when you search on the keywords baby boomer women. If you're not a member of the NABBW, you're welcome to join us. You'll find a handy link at the top right-hand corner of the NABBW website, and you can use that to join. This call is an example of one of the many benefits we provide our members. We have recordings of over 90 past teleseminars, which are yours, with a gold-level membership in NABBW. And we keep these in the members-only area of the website. So if you were to go to the website and you're not a member, you'll find lots of content, but you won't find the recordings because they are in the private area. Now, let me go on to explain a little bit about the format that we'll be using for our call tonight. Please get comfortable and make sure that you have something to drink as well as paper and pen, because if you're living in the United States when you're listening to this, I can't imagine that there's any part of the United States that isn't beastly hot tonight. So I'm sure something to drink would be really important. And the paper and pen is important, too, because I know you're going to want to take notes. So for the next 45 minutes or so, we'll mute the lines while Kelly Connors and I talk about how she's found the me in menopause and how you can too. After that, I will open the lines for questions from the audience. If you have a question before the lines are open, use the box on your computer screen to type in your questions, and I'll see them as they come in and be able to relay them to Kelly. Now, let's get started by something very important, an opportunity for me to introduce our guest. Kelly is the founder and host of Real Women on Health, and you can find that website at realwomenonhealth.com, which is a women's health conversation network with a mission to empower women to be their own best health and wellness advocates. The online community hosts events, radio shows, and events for women as influencers, activists, and caregivers in health today. But more than a host, Kelly is a healthcare marketing and communications expert and an advocate for women's health. Her life mission is to help wellness organizations, pharmaceutical companies, hospitals, and insurance companies create a health or wellness brand that women trust and trust most. She does this by providing programs to sponsors that help them reach the women they seek to reach, influence, and build relationships with. Throughout her career, she has worked across diverse areas such as vision care, medical devices, women's health, urology, disease prevention, public health, pharmaceutical marketing, broadcast media, and more. She has helped life science and medical device companies, from pre-commerce to post-marketing initiatives, build their brands and businesses using the new rules and tools of public relations and marketing in a socially connected world. Kelly is frequently invited to speak publicly, and she's made presentations to many organizations. In the last 3 years, I know she's spoken to the 2009 Public Relations Society of America Health Academy annual meeting, and I have been on the national board of PRSA, so I know all about the importance of what the Health Academy does. She's spoken to MedAd News Pharma Media Conference, the U.S. Small Business Association SCORE organization, the New York Women's Chamber of Commerce, Go Red for Women's Summit on Women's Health, Marketing to the New Healthcare Community, and the World Congress Leadership Summit on the Business of Women's Health. Kelly received a master's in public health from Boston University School of Public Health with a Certificate of Public Communication from BU's School of Public Communications and the University of Geneva, Switzerland, which is in Geneva, Switzerland. Please help me welcome Kelly Connors.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Anne. I'm delighted that I'm here speaking with your community and one that I'm proud to be a member of, Baby Boomer Women. It's really important, I think, that us women band together and define the second half of our life together, because we're the ones who are going to be living it, and we're going to be living it not only just for a few years, God willing, we are going to be living the second half of our life for 3, maybe 4 decades.
Isn't that amazing?
And never before has this been possible. I mean, you know, in generations, think about, you know, every once in a while you'd hear of an older woman, you know, living into 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But our ancestors really were not living nearly as long as we're going to be living. So I think that's really exciting, and it creates a new opportunity for us to shape our future.
Oh, I'm so glad that you think that way, because, you know, so many times when we listen to our mothers, you know, tell us about what menopause, or even when we were learning about having periods, you know, the curse and, you know, that kind of thing. So I'm so excited that you're viewing the menopausal stage of our lives as a time of awakening and of realizing our potential and being a freeing time of our lives. But I'd certainly like to ask you if you could tell us a little bit about what led you to start viewing this stage as such a wonderful time.
Well, you know, I was a fan of, like probably many of our listeners, of Gail Sheehy. That was maybe in the early 80s, and she wrote the book Passages. Maybe it was the 70s. But I remember being quite young then and looking at the book in my parents' nightstand and flipping through it saying, oh, my God, there's a crisis. They're in midlife.
Mm-hmm.
And the Passages book then was really about passages through and with the assumption that a crisis was necessary to have the passage. And just knowing that that's been the past, and Gail Sheehy would be the first to admit she had no idea what midlife really would be, because mm-hmm. her idea of old was her parents, and they were like 55.
Mm-hmm.
Things have changed over the last few decades. And I've been tracking how the media, especially, and Hollywood, looks at women who are our age, in our 50s, in our 60s. And there isn't a lot of programming that we can really relate to and say, hey, you know, I can learn about the second half of my life through the media. I for one, couldn't look at Sex and the City that way. I mean, the women are decidedly, you know, they're younger.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not setting the stage to help us do anything. And then, you know, then there's Desperate Housewives. And that doesn't do much for us except paint us as crazy people. So I just kind of looked at Hollywood and how the media portrays women. You're either invisible or you're crazy, or something's wrong with you and you're sick. It's not, there's nothing like, there hasn't been, I think it's getting better, but there hasn't been anything empowering about this stage of our life. And I feel so vibrant and active. It doesn't square with how I feel
mm-hmm.
or how I see myself and how I see my life and my friends. And while we're all entertained by the media, I think that it does us a disservice. And I think I can maybe count on one hand, you know, oh, gosh, you know, Nora Ephron, wasn't she the best? She would always help us along here. But, you know, there's been very little that's been helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to really take a look at it and kind of start to look at how I was paving my own pathway through the second half of my life, which I see as menopause as the gateway.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, my background in healthcare really, it's kind of my perspective. I'm not so much a media hound, but I have been kind of looking at culture, and because midlife is a cultural term, and
mm-hmm.
We haven't used it much before these days because there was no need to. You were either young or old, but now there's midlife,
mm-hmm.
and midlife is kind of like, wow, you still have room to do stuff.
Right.
And that's the way I see it. I don't know about you, but I definitely see it as the glass half full.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very wonderful, positive affirmation there. So let's start by going with my first question for you. And And I love the topic that you gave me here, finding the me in menopause, because obviously menopause starts with M-E, but I don't think I'd ever seen that me in menopause. You know, I might maybe looked and saw the word man in there and pause and couldn't quite figure out how that had to do with the word.
Yeah, menopause. I know.
But so you've broken it up a different way with me. So what would you say is, what's the biggest challenge to actually finding the me in menopause?
Well, I think it's almost like what you just described, is it's hard to see it in that word. You look at the word menopause, you think it's a health, you know, first of all, we think it's something medical, something health, you know, the doctor talks to us about it, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like a word that, you know, a lot of women don't like to say or talk about. It's just kind of like, doesn't mean anything positive. So I just took a look at it and said, you know, this is an important time in my life, and it's a time where I am seeking to find a greater purpose, fulfillment for myself on earth, and that's who I really am, like really, really finding who I am. Not that I would say until menopause I was lost, it's just finding your real core, what you are here to do, what you love to do, and to focus more on me, even in the self-care sense, where our kids are finally getting out of the house. Maybe they'll come back and live in the basement, but we did get them through college, and we may have intact marriages, we may not. Our husbands may have died or maybe divorced. Things happen along the way. And I think that the me in menopause, it's challenging because for the first time, we women are asked to actually look at ourselves and take care of ourselves so that the next 3 or 4 decades can be more than we ever dreamed of. Not that they have to be the rosy path. It's more that the richness and depth of life will be ours for the taking. And some of that will necessarily involve loss because our parents are aging, our skin is sagging, we're no longer fertile. So, yeah, it does involve loss. It involves shedding old patterns of thinking, more importantly. So I see the challenge is there is some loss involved, but there's also a richness to it that if we take a look at self-care, taking care of ourselves in a new way, emotionally, physically, financially, that this me in menopause is full of possibilities and a new slate. And it's a gateway. It's a gateway to the second half of our life.
All right. So we would be able to say that whereas, you know, we hear so many women talk about the terrible sadness of the empty nest, you would see it more as, okay, now, and this is the way I personally have seen it. I can't tell you how excited I was when my last kid went off to college, you know, much as I had loved being a mother, and I think I was a good and nurturing and caring parent, you know, I was excited when I didn't have to be worried about, you know, curfews and making sure everybody got home at night. You know, they were off on their own. I figured I did a good job raising them, so you know, they ought to be able to cope, and now it was my time. So, but what would you say would be the key that challenges most of us in finding the as you call it so nicely, the me in this part of our lives?
I think that it's at this point in our lives, we really, to quote a woman who's, her name is Susan Weed, S-U-S-U-N, Weed. She is a wise woman that Christiane Northrup embraces. She says, during your menopausal transformation, you will be asked to die to this mass conditioning, for you are entering a place of power that is beyond fertility. And so the challenge is not being, as she says, mass conditioning. Who have people expected us to be? I think we have long along the way have kind of bought into something. That isn't necessarily us. It's just us living our life. And the challenge is to, as she says, die to this mass conditioning. We have to jump out of the box and find our own way. And we do that by supporting, by asking questions, by community, banding together, hearing one another's stories. How did she do it? What is she doing? How could I do mine the way that I want to do it, live my path forward? But in the younger years, to the contrary, we have been expected to be mothers in many cases, expected to be whatever our parents have expected us to be or whatever society and our family has expected us to be. We are the caregivers and the caretakers and the child bearers, and fertility has a big F in front of it. It's a big deal in our society. And things are changing now, but I think for us baby boomer women, you know, we all grew up, many of us, I know I did, grew up very traditionally. Not much was expected of me except to get married and be happy. But, you know, as in just, you know, enjoy your life. It's a great one. And it's kind of like, well, how am I going to do, you know, I didn't have children, actually. You know, I thought, you know, someday I will. But then all of a sudden it was like too late and there was no guy. And I was like, well, this isn't working out, you know, because I got my master's degree. I'm working in New York City. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, that's what they expected of me. But I never got around to it. And so for me, finding my me hasn't been so much loss of fertility, because I suppose if I really wanted to have kids, it would have dawned on me before it was too late. I mean, that normally would happen to most women. So I don't think it's a regret on my part, that piece of it. But finding the me is really letting myself, for the first time, be confident in the pathway going forward, even in the face of uncertainty. And in that uncertainty, we'll ask questions and we'll discover our own pathway to well-being. So the finding the me is the path, discovering your pathway to well-being.
Okay. And is there a key that we can use to help us to find that pathway?
And the key to that is what I have kind of three words that I use. It's kind of almost like a call to action, but it's hard to do. It's pause, and there's the pause in menopause. Pause, reflect, and shed.
Okay.
And the pause is really taking the time to get out of the space, the environment that may be keeping you in a box or keeping you in a certain pattern. Changing your routines, adopting a new hobby. But this doesn't come easily. It's not as easy as, you know, pressing a button and saying, okay, now I'm going to start painting and this is my new pathway. It could be, but the pausing is really important, and the reflection and the journaling, being inquisitive and being aware of how we're feeling and how our relationships are, because they're the most, for women, usually the most important aspect of our lives are our relationships. So it's pausing, giving ourselves time to put a comma in the sentence and to stop the treadmill that keeps us locked in a pattern where we're not first. We're putting everybody else's needs first. The reflecting allows us to take the time, and the method may be meditation, it just may be sitting quietly by a pond, but it's getting away from the busyness of life, reflecting on what's important to you. And it usually takes some time. It may be a new habit that you can adopt and go forward with it for the rest of your life. But the reflection isn't something that society or our families let us do easily, because we're usually busy taking care of stuff. So the reflecting is a part where you have to honor yourself and go inward and do some inward work and create vision for how you want to live going forward. And really, you take the time every day to read a book that inspires you. Get fed, fuel your own fire with opportunities to be with your girlfriends. That helps you reflect as well. It can. It depends on your friends, but it can help you reflect. And it could be going in a spiritual direction where you haven't done before, but exploring your own spirituality that, as we get older, provides a lot of nurturing for us. And the third thing is shedding. We will be asked to shed things in our life that we were attached to. It could be our big homes. It could be our jobs. We may lose our job, or we may no longer be interested in it. Our parents die. That's a big one. And these are all, as I said earlier, losses, but we have to just embrace the shedding that happens in the second half of our life, so that it creates a pathway for, as the goddesses say, rebirth.
Mm-hmm.
So the rebirthing is where we're going to really get our new energy and live in a different, possibly a different way than we have in the past. Probably because physiologically our hormones are different. We don't have the same desires. We don't have the same needs. And life can get a lot simpler through shedding.
Mm-hmm.
And through that we can really see more clearly the pathway forward, or at least embrace the possibility for a new pathway, because we're not encumbered by stuff that we've carried with us, baggage mm-hmm. that we've carried with us in our lives. Not to say that our aging parents are our baggage,
mm-hmm.
but maybe they are, but it's more that we have been just kind of bumbling along because of our youth. Your youth gives us that energy to not really pay attention. And now, having some time for reflection, we'll see that there are things in our life that we really don't need anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And just the act of shedding and prioritizing what we're going to shed will breathe new possibilities into our life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can certainly agree with all of that. But I stopped you. I interrupted you. So go ahead.
Well, so those are three tenets that I've been doing my, passing through the gateway with. You know, I no longer am working in the city, desiring to be in, busy mode all the time. But I'm looking to ramp up my consulting business
mm-hmm.
and my speaking engagements. I'm desiring still to live fully in life. I want to build my business much more. I'm more interested in my business than anything, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say my family's not important, but it used to be much more family-oriented. And now I find that there's time for me. And I am involved in caretaking for my mother-in-law, and soon, probably in the next 5 years or more, hopefully, but my own parents. So, it's not like, I'm 20 and I'm starting to be – it's a whole different ball game.
Sure.
But I guess it means I'll have a little more control over my life if I'm building my business. At least that's my desire. And
mm-hmm.
I really want to be in it, and in it to win it. But when I had my career in New York, I was in it to do what I thought I had to do.
Mm-hmm.
It was not the same level of fulfillment that I have now with what I do. And I think that's really key. This is all about personal fulfillment, really, and being able to give in a new way besides bearing children. Maybe it's, teaching a class or giving back in your community or coaching, coaching a sport.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways that we can still tether to our maternal instincts if that's what we desire. But every woman is different. Everyone has different needs around that. So that's really how I'm finding my me, though. It's really focused around my business.
Well, I can certainly understand that, and I think most of our listeners could too. But you talked about, that the role models of the women that we would see on TV, the Desperate Housewives or whatever, certainly are not role models that I've had any interest in following. But I certainly think that there must be role models out there in the world that we can look to. I would, one that comes to my mind, of course, would be someone like Hillary Clinton. But have you had any thoughts on other role models that we might be able to look to for how we could find a, you know, fulfillment in our me phase of our life?
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that now that the energy is shifting and we are seeing more women who are really taking to the stage. I mean, still, the working woman's profile. We're still not earning what we need to, and things like that. But let's just say that there is a spotlight now on women's empowerment, and Hillary Clinton, I think, is a perfect example of a leader in this area. I mean, she was the one who went out to the Beijing Women's Conference like maybe 8 years ago at this point. So she's looking at women's empowerment globally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there's lots of role models now. I don't know if I would look at the media, but definitely you see now and again, you do see in the media, people like Meryl Streep. I was thinking of, she is really spearheading the National Women's History Museum, and she donated, I think, all the proceeds from one of her movies to making that monument happen in Washington. She's someone who I really, really admire. I think there's a fair number of, politics aside, the women's conference that Maria Shriver started a few years ago. Now she's really focused on Alzheimer's and caregivers. But she did a lot to raise the profile of women. There's more women starting their own businesses now, so there's lots of women empowerment groups, that mastermind groups with women, ladies who launch. There's lots of women entrepreneurs, I think, that are really, we're doing our own thing, but it's entrepreneurial. It's not necessarily that we're getting kudos in the boardroom. Although Sheryl Sandberg at Facebook, now she's on the board of directors, so that's fantastic. But it's like whenever women do something like that, it's kind of like a big deal. We have to like always stop and celebrate it because it's not the status quo. There still has to be a lot more of mentoring, I think, opportunities happening for young women so that it becomes more normalized that women are in positions of power. But there's many, many, many reasons. I know that's not the purpose of this talk, but there's many, many reasons why that's happening in the workplace today. And not the least of which is women can, have it all, but not all at once, because we want to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that definitely is a huge responsibility and importance in our society and for us personally.
Right.
So I think that there are role models. We may not be celebrating them enough, possibly, but I do feel like, since I'm working in the area of women's health today, that I do see women out there. We just may not be highlighting them. Bernie Dean Healy, was just 10 years ago when she had started the Women's Health Initiative study, and she was a great role model for women of all ages. She unfortunately passed away a few years ago, but she was the first woman in charge of the National Institute of Health, and if she didn't put her stamp on the budget, $600 million going to the Women's Health Initiative study, women would still be dying of estrogen.
Mm-hmm.
And wondering why. She said, I want to get to the bottom of this, and I'm going to do it. And she got that position. And it wasn't an easy position for her to have. But I definitely, I think I do support organizations who are always highlighting women, the women leadership, in whatever, in the arts, in the sciences, and in business today. I think it's important to do that. So
right.
I hope there's more women coming down the, I think as we age too, right, as we get older, we'll be looking for role models, not in their 50s and 60s, but in our 70s and 80s and 90s, because there'll
sure.
be more of us living longer.
I think that makes sense. Now, you said something earlier about menopause and being a medical condition. So if I could backtrack a little bit, I took note when you said that we should probably talk about that. Do you see menopause as a medical condition?
I don't see it as a medical condition. I think that it's been medicalized by specifically pharmaceutical companies who would then benefit from women taking estrogen. But since these studies have come out that have spun out of the huge WHI study, which focused just on estrogen, there's studies coming out all the time about heart health, about bone health, about depression, and these spin-off things have not just a health component to it, but a well-being component. So when I think of menopause, I think of just the limited topic that it is, that it was spawned by, you know, the need or the desire for women, you know, decades ago, they wanted to preserve their youth. And but men were the ones who kind of instigated this whole thing. I mean, the men were behind it and then came up with the estrogen formulations. I just don't think that was, this is hindsight's 2020 at this point. So now we know, you know, that wasn't a great idea. I just don't think that it's really given the pathway that I've taken, and probably because I do a lot of my own exercise. You know, I mean, I exercise a lot. I take it upon myself to join the rowing team. I bike, I do endurance biking. Again, you know, I don't have kids. I don't have that extra responsibility, so I do have time to do these kinds of things, and I am working at home. But I'm seeing menopause as not medical at all. I see it as a gateway to the second half of our life, but it's not a medical condition. What is medical are the other components that happen, which are heart disease, osteoporosis, lung cancer, stroke, these are things that we have to prevent. And if all we're doing is focused on menopause, we'll miss it. We'll miss all these other things that actually are medical conditions. And we have the opportunity, because science has progressed, to understand that it's food, it's nutrition, it's food, it's exercise, and it's our emotional state that contribute much has been found, contribute much to our health as we age. So, again, I don't see menopause as medical, but I see the sequelae of a lower estrogen level in our body as medical.
Okay.
So the result of lower estrogen is a risk factor for cancer, for heart disease, for osteoporosis, and for depression. So, you know, that's the medical piece. And sometimes the doctors ignore it. Doctors are ignoring it because they think that's just what happens to women. And we don't get a fair shake at it, and we need to become more knowledgeable about what is actually true and happening to our body when the estrogen levels decrease. That's the key thing.
All right. Is there a good place that we can go to get this information?
There are – my favorite websites for getting great information are the Mayo Clinic, Kaiser Permanente, and there's a website called healthywomen.org. There is also the National Institute of Health has a division of alternative and complementary medicine, and you can find articles that show the proof that acupuncture is good for treating hot flashes. It's also good for treating depression that comes along with some of the consequences of surviving breast cancer, depression. And it seems to beat out, the acupuncture seems to beat out soy and other products that we typically hear of as being beneficial. But that alternative and complementary medicine component of the NIH is terrific, and they've gotten more funding because the WHI study showed that, this estrogen isn't working the way we thought, and so other modalities such as acupuncture, for example, are being studied to help women get through some of the hardships associated with the estrogen deficiency. So those are the ones that I think are my favorite. I mean, there's also a website. There's also like the WebMDs mm-hmm. of the world. There's also a website called Middlesex MD, and Barbara Dupre does. She's the physician that started it. She does a great job at helping women maintain their sexual life and sexual health, even though there's not a lot written about that part of menopause. I mean, it's starting to become more and more of a topic that we women want to have vital sex lives through mm-hmm. through our life and not just stop because we're in menopause. Husbands don't like that either.
No, probably not.
So those are kind of top of mind, and also for specific position papers on menopause, in other words, what is the most scientific and evidence-based research out there, you should look at the North American Menopause Society website, which is, I think it's NAMS, NAMS.org.
Okay.
But it's the North American Menopause Society, and they have annual meetings, and when they always reveal a new position paper, but I think there was one recently on osteoporosis and the use of estrogen. So when you go to your doctor, you can take a look at what the clinical papers are and the position papers they have and print them out and have a discussion with your doctor about it, because a lot of these things that I'm saying are scientific and evidence-based medicine. They are statistics and population-based. They're not individual. That's mm-hmm. the key with talking with your doctor, that you need to talk about your own risk factors and your own propensity for heart disease and osteoporosis, because sometimes the numbers are population-based. It's just like if you have cancer, it's depressing to look at some of the statistics because it doesn't look like you really want to believe them, that the survival rates aren't that great. But when women especially take power into their hands and learn and really shift their lifestyle, they can make tremendous inroads against cancer and surviving cancer. I'm talking mostly about breast cancer.
Well, that's very good information to have. How would you say is the best way to come to grips with knowing that we're in the second half of our lives?
That's a good question. I struggle with that one. Like, I'm very positive. I understand how to frame things in a new way. Oh, well, it's not, it is the second half of our life. It's the glass half full. I'm very good at, positive framing of things mm-hmm. because so much of how we experience life is reflected in our own attitudes. So I guess that's fundamental for me, is just positive reframing of life, not seeing life as the half-empty glass, but being grateful, looking at the possibilities for something new to happen, just as much as blooms happen every spring, that there is opportunity for that in our life. And I know that the way I just talked doesn't sound like I'm very convincing, because I'm really struggling with seeing, my beloved mom and dad get older and my mother-in-law get older, and that kind of gets me down, mm-hmm. to see their struggles. And so I'm kind of living in that right now. But I try to, turn to exercise to try to get out of that kind of a funk. And I try to surround myself with my friends, positive people, and have fun and laugh and support one another and contribute to society, like being on this teleseminar with you. And, you know, I really try to do things that in my youth I never would have thought of because they weren't necessary then. It didn't dawn on me that I really needed to contribute. I just needed to have a successful career in New York. And I don't know what that meant, but it was something like climbing the ladder and making more money.
Right.
And now it seems as though it is positive reframing of life and being grateful for what we do have in our lives, because there is much in our society to be grateful for from a societal perspective. And sometimes we go through trying times in our life where it's like, ooh, this is really the second half. This is a lot different than the first half. I had no, I had my grandparents die about 10 years ago. But prior to that, I had no illness in my family, 5 brothers and sisters, all have kids, no illnesses, no deaths, no bad car accidents. It's remarkable. And my mother and I used to say, look at each other and go, we are so lucky. We haven't had the unfortunate incidences that happen, you know, in people's lives. And now it's kind of like, well, you know, the inevitable is going to happen, Kel.
Right.
Life is going to come to an end, but it's like, okay, you know, but we still have every day. We still have every day, and we still have every day to live in the now, and I think that's the gift that we have to be willing to receive, is living in the now, living every moment, because now what we are in our wisdom, we understand that life can end at any moment. And when you're younger, you never think that.
Oh, no. And there's something about when we're younger, we think that we could never die. I mean, I remember when I first realized that I was mortal, and it was a very strange realization because, you know, all as a child growing up, I knew that there is death, you know, and I knew that was something that happened. But suddenly there came a time, and I'm not quite sure if I was in my 30s or if it was younger than that, but there suddenly came a time when I really learned it. You know, suddenly I was realizing I could have died. You know, I think it happened when I had a lot of complications with my first pregnancy, and I actually had situations where I was hospitalized repeatedly before my daughter was born, and I had toxemia. So I suddenly was realizing that the doctor thinks that if I don't handle this properly, I could die. And I'm thinking, but I'm only in my 20s, you know. That
yeah. Can't.
So yes, I think that there comes that time when we take something from being we understand it intellectually until where we understand it personally. And
yes, exactly. You know, it was kind of like in my public relations career, I would always love to work on these advocacy programs where I worked with patient advocates and helped them become educated and empowered to, you know, cope with and manage their chronic illness. And then that was, you know, in the 80s and 90s and early 2000. And then my dad, about 5 years ago, was diagnosed with chronic myelogenous leukemia. And it was the first time where I said, well, this is like I have to be an advocate now for him. And it was totally different. It was totally different than just talking about what it is, you know, telling people what they needed to know about a condition, a drug, or a treatment, you know.
Right.
When you're in it, it's just, it's you know, multidimensional. And so that's I think, part of getting beyond just kind of a one-dimensional view on life. Although I have to say, like, I've met a lot of young women in the last few months where I admire them for their already vision of their place in the world and what they want to achieve. And it's not just limited to their job. It's like they really want to make a difference in the world. And I think it's the social media part of how they grew up and how they want to express themselves. So I feel like now, our socially inspired world has both positive and negatives, but I've seen in a lot of young women how they have a bigger vision for their life than I had at their age. But now I feel like I'm accessing those social tools as well. So I'm just, I'm a couple decades older than them, but I'm doing the same thing. I'm wanting to be part of, a player in the world, not just in for my own stuff,
Well, absolutely. I noticed on your website, which I was going to ask you about, but I will, but I've noticed on your website that you do a lot of blogging and you're involved in social media. So certainly you've been led to this medium, and I am assuming that you've been led to it because as a public relations and marketing person, you realize that these are crucial ways to communicate that we never had available to us as communicators a decade ago.
You're absolutely right. It is my kind of training and instincts in PR and marketing that I just grabbed onto these social tools and said, wow, look what all the things you can do with them. So I have my online radio show, like yourself. Like I feel like we're both advocates for women. Mm-hmm. And we are able to do that through these social tools. And that's really, really helped me to gain a lot of passion for what I do, because I can see that I can impact not just one woman at a time, but many women. And many women impact other women. So I feel like it's really changed how we communicate, but it's changed what we can expect.
Mm-hmm.
It's changed our expectations about what we can achieve in our life. And I think that's really cool. I never, ever thought I was going to be a radio show host.
Right.
My own radio show. We have 20,000 downloads. I have 3,000 women in my little community. And everybody is really passionate about women's health and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And from time to time, I get calls from women saying, oh, I heard this show or I did that. And don't you just love when people give you feedback that shows that you're not just talking to yourself?
Right. Absolutely.
You know, there's someone on the other end there. And I love that. I love it. And I wouldn't have been able to achieve that without the social media that we have today.
And I'm so glad that you've been able to use it. But why don't I give you a chance to tell me a little bit more, and our listeners, a little bit more about your organization, Real Women on Health.
Sure. Well, Real Women on Health is an online community and a radio show. It was started about 3 years ago. And our mission is to empower women to be their own best health and wellness advocates. So it's really in line with what I've been talking about tonight. Let's just find the me in menopause. It's like we have the answers ourselves. We can't treat ourselves with drugs, that part of it, but we can take control and make changes in our life that will better our own health and the relationships that we have and the health of those that we're taking care of. I see that when women come together and support one another with their own stories, that new possibilities open up for other women who are seeking answers, who are seeking some kind of light in the darkness. And so our community I'm leading it in the sense that I put topics out there. I survey our community, see what they want. We're now kind of evolving into the next phase where I'll be partnering with a health coach and possibly creating health coach forums where health coaches support one another in building their practice and in creating new business opportunities and in taking care of their own health. So just noodling over all that right now, but the Real Women on Health community has been a source for the media. So we've had media interviews like the National Association of Baby Boomer, very similar, just staying involved in current issues in health and health care and bringing important health considerations that are gender-based to women's forefront. Because you know, gender does play a role in how you're treated at the doctor office, more so as we age. But still, the doctor-patient relationship, if it's a male-female relationship, there it can be trying, and it can lead down some difficult pathways. But mostly because women are not small men. Mm-hmm. And the research has been showing more and more that this is indeed the case, and it's certainly the case with heart disease. So we've been focusing on heart disease specifically, and I joined the Go Red for Women movement a couple of years ago, and I'm on their volunteer leadership team to get the message out and to help women make lifestyle changes with the understanding that heart disease is what's killing women. It's a silent killer. Mm-hmm. But it's really the number one cause of death, not just in elderly women, but in young women as well, especially like the diabetes epidemic. Heart disease is now happening in our children's lives at a young age. So, yes, I've been focusing on making healthy lifestyle changes, focusing on inflammatory process, these kind of what happens in your body, why is chronic disease killing so many people, like cancer, diabetes, and heart disease? What happens in our body? What is it about? So we've been talking to experts who have written diet and nutrition books who have survived and really taken control of their cancer diagnosis and done what the doctor said or not. Mm-hmm. And they have lessons to tell us, stories to tell. So the healthy living portion of our mission is really important, empowering women to be their own best health and wellness advocate, because I don't think that we can rely on the healthcare system to do the whole job. They can do some of it, mm-hmm. but they can't do the whole job for us. And we want to live into our 90s, right? So
absolutely.
We want to dance into our 90s.
Oh, that would be best if we could all do that. Well, I have unlocked the call now, so anybody who's listening who has a question that they would like to ask Kelly, you don't have to raise your hand in any way. Just speak up, and we'll hear you speaking, and we'll recognize you and ask you to ask your question. How come I can't say ask your question? So I will be quiet and see if anyone would like to speak up. Okay, I'm not really good about being quiet for a long time, so if no one is going to speak up really fast there, I will ask you to tell us a little bit more about Real Women on Health. How is there a way that our listeners can get involved?
Yes, definitely. It's realwomenonhealth.com is our blog, and you can find out about radio shows there. You could also, if you like Facebook, we do have a Facebook page, so it's facebook.com/realwomen, plural, women on health. And you can see the community that's developing around us there. Sign up for a newsletter right there on the Facebook. We have a couple boxes that you can dive into and interact with. You can leave a post. If you are a community leader yourself, in other words, if you have a community that's working women or health condition, or anything that you do want to make a connection with Real Women on Health, definitely leave us a message there on the wall, and we will invite you into our radio shows. We don't have the shows scheduled on a regular basis. We tried the beginning of the year, and it worked for about 2 months. Then I got really busy. So right now it's averaging once a month, mm-hmm. and we have a schedule that's going out until October at this point. And we involve our community. So the people that we involve in the radio shows are members of our community. Sometimes we get celebrities and book authors and promote them, because I'll get a publicist who wants to hook us up with like Lisa Rankin or Chris Carr, and they both have done a lot of TED Talks for women. Mm-hmm. So Real Women on Health is there for you, and it's on LinkedIn as well. So if you're a working woman and you really want to stay connected in a business sense, that's definitely part of our mission as well, helping Working Women network their business. Mm-hmm. It's usually health-related, and also to take care of their own health. And then stay tuned, because, as I said, we are evolving our community, and we're going to be doing some special programming probably end of this year, beginning of next year. And then I have a marketing consulting business, so if you are interested in marketing consulting, it's KC, the initials KC-health.com. And my clients are usually pharmaceutical companies, insurance companies, hospitals, consumer packaged goods companies, and they want to directly connecting and engage with women around a health topic.
Mm-hmm.
So I help them do that through different strategies. So those kind of our contact points, and we just love to have the baby boomer women represented there, and I'm sure most of our members are. In fact, I looked at the demographics on Facebook, because you can really see who's in your community, and most of the women in our community are 45 to 55 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the fastest growing demo on Facebook.
I was just going to say, that's a very powerful Facebook demographic, so a good place to be.
Yes, definitely. But I so appreciate you inviting me to the teleseminar, because I've enjoyed this conversation. It's great. I had those slides. And
I was going to say, go ahead and tell them about the slides, because you had beautiful slides, which I failed to get uploaded for the call here this evening. My technology challenge caused that to happen. So.
Yeah, well, I do talks with women's groups in the community, so I find that the best way to engage women who are, you know, after work, everyone's tired, is not to just talk, but to have really bright, vibrant pictures
mm-hmm.
of what I'm talking about. So I have probably 34 pictures. Some of them have words on them, but I focus on there's one that I really, you know, we're breaking down the myths associated with aging, and one of them is strong is the new thin. That's
mm-hmm.
not a myth. That's like my new mantra. Strong is the new thin.
Okay.
And it shows pictures of women rowing, which I love to do, rowing a scull boat on the river, and you could see that, you know,